Coming up on this episode of The Social Hour, boy, Facebook's looking more like Yelp every day. Plus, Twitter accounts are being hacked left and right. It's getting ugly out there, folks. LinkedIn wants to be the place for all your contacts, where they all live, all that, and some networks for pets.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 108, recorded Thursday, April 25th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP. To improve your customer service and support experience, take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another fun-filled episode of The Social Hour. It is episode 108. Wow, that's a lot of episodes. And from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from South Florida. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Amber. I heard you mention, you sort of threw out there before the show that it's about 80 degrees where you are. And that's, yes. You know, at what? 7 p.m. at night. It must feel pretty good.
It is pretty beautiful, I have to say. I was at a restaurant this afternoon, sitting on the patio, having some amazing seafood, some oysters, some clams. And my whole family's down here, as well as my best friend, Jenna. And we've been having a fabulous time. I'm here for one more week, and then it's back to Toronto. And hopefully, fingers crossed, by that time, it will be true patio weather and it'll be warming up a little bit. Because when I left, it wasn't pretty, Sarah.
Yeah,
not gonna lie.
You've been a very good sport about the fact that you didn't really have much of a spring up in the Toronto.
No, not so much. Yeah, you know, normally we do have a nicer spring, but so far this year it's been kind of mixed weather, especially mixed precipitation, and that's never fun because you can handle snow, maybe rain, but when it's sort of in between and freezing, it is not so enjoyable.
Not good. Well, if it makes you feel any better, San Francisco is all over the charts. It was super hot 2 days ago. Then yesterday I was at a baseball game, which was really fun, but it started warm and ended very, very cold, and no one had enough scarves or hats to actually be comfortable. So you can't win unless you're in Florida. I guess that's where you win.
Yeah, then you can win. Then it's all good. So even though I'm here and kind of on a vacation, like always, I'm also working and following along with social media news and so much happening and lots to cover on the show. Our first story, I guess, Sarah, we have Facebook challenges Yelp with mobile pages redesign featuring actions, local biz details, and ratings. So it makes perfect sense for Facebook to do something like this.
Yeah, it does. If you want to pull up the article, if you scroll down to, there's sort of an old page design versus the new page design. This is the mobile app, you know, Facebook's mobile app. And what the article is pointing out is how much the new app looks like a Yelp competitor. And there's obviously more emphasis on what's the rating of this. They use Woodhouse Fish Company, which is a fish restaurant in San Francisco, as an example of the old and the new. So you've got the icon and sort of the cover photo, but in the new version, you've got these nice handy-dandy links to say, yes, I like this, I would like to check in here. So we've got sort of some Foursquare functionality here. Would you like to call the restaurant? Do you want to know more about it? You know, maybe like menu or hours. You've got a nice map that is expandable. So to me, this is exactly, Amber, why I go to Yelp as often as I do. It's like, those are the sorts of, where is it? What's the phone number? I use the Yelp app constantly, not always even to read reviews from anybody, just to get sort of just the nitty gritty on information about what corner is that restaurant on, type of a thing. So, you know, this is Yelp. This is Facebook keeping up a little bit. Although, Amber, I have to say that of all the things that Facebook is good for, I really never check in anywhere on Facebook with anyone. So I'm not sure if it's going to change my behavior at all just because it looks better. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, I do think it looks good. You know, obviously, like you said, they've borrowed some ideas from Yelp, but I do think there are so many people who use Facebook who don't use location-based services in terms of checking in and don't think about Facebook as a place where they're going to go and find out information about a venue like this. So in many ways, I think Yelp just has such a massive head start and such a community built in there, because I think about people I know who use Yelp, and that's a lot of people, and they use it on a regular basis, probably just like we do. And I don't see them having the same sort of habits that they do on Yelp and transferring that automatically over to Facebook. So maybe they'll get a small percentage of people, but hey, maybe that's all the people that Facebook needs because there's such a massive audience there already.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the comparison that the TechCrunch reporter is making is, of course, to Yelp, but this is also what Foursquare is moving towards more than ever. It's all, you know, exploring places that are around you, trying to figure out, you know, using it as a Yelp competitor as well. So Facebook is such a big company. It's like Facebook can sort of do whatever it wants. Hey, Yelp's got this great new product. Well, let's make our product look like that. You know, yeah. There's a new app called WhatsApp. Let's do something like that. You know,
so exactly. I'm feeling lately, I don't know, because I know you cover the mobile world a lot as far as different apps, but I'm feeling like there's no real innovation happening in terms of design. And I think back to when Path first came out and how beautifully designed that app is, and many people kind of borrowing ideas from there. And I'm looking at the Yelp app and then looking at, you know, Facebook's recent addition of some of these features. And I just feel like everything is starting to look exactly the same. No one's doing anything different. They're all just kind of playing catch up.
Exactly. Speaking of playing catch up with the truth, earlier this week, Amber, I don't know if you happened to see, I happened to be on Twitter right when this all went down. So I watched the confusion unfold. But the AP, Associated Press, the official AP Twitter account, had sent out a tweet that said something along the lines of, there was an explosion at the White House. President Obama is injured. And sure enough, my news feed exploded. I was actually right in the middle of doing TNT, and so we're sort of talking on the back channel. Clearly it was hacked, but, well, clearly to me, right? When you have millions and millions of people on Twitter, and however many people who see this account start retweeting it and freaking out, you get a lot of pandemonium. Even if you were to stop and think about it, you realize, nah, something not right about this. The AP account got hacked. This is following a CBS account got hacked last week, and a couple CBS, I think like maybe the official Viacom account, like that. And it was interesting, Amber, to watch even people that, you know, I they're very smart and they just happen to follow the AP, you know, were tweeting it out and saying, gosh, you know, I hope this was a hack type of a thing. And sure enough, Twitter was quick to suspend the account, because it got a lot of tension in a very short amount of time. And the AP then sent out, you know, because it has a few other tweets. This was the official AP tweet, Twitter account, that yes, indeed, they were hacked. They're kind of trying to figure out what's going on. And, you know, at this point, it becomes, you know, how are all these accounts getting hacked so easily? And there's discussion of Twitter implementing some sort of a two-factor authentication plan so that it's just harder for people to get their accounts taken over and spread misinformation. And the thing is, Amber, is this is not just one of these things where you go, oh boy, those kids hacking and saying crazy stuff on Twitter. The stock market actually dipped to the point that it was, for a very short period of time, due to a fear and uncertainty and doubt caused by a tweet that had no basis in reality at all. So that's where you get into like, well, this is scary stuff. I mean, we can't have a market that's determined on who can hack a password, right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think we're going to see so much more of this in the future. And I think people are also just too quick to retweet information. No one necessarily checks sources or verifies anything that they put out there. I mean, I've done it. You know, you see something and you want to maybe be the first person to post and share that, and then you forget about using your brain. And I think what happened in this situation is exactly that. And unfortunately, the word just spread too quickly. So Twitter is going to have to do something, because I think, you know, to date, we've been relatively unaffected by some of these tweets that have gone out as far as people being hacked. But you can imagine how much more damage this could do than just hitting the markets. I mean, it could be something even bigger than this because an account was hacked. So hopefully they do come up with a better way to be able to authenticate Twitter accounts in terms of that additional security, because I think this is just the beginning of a lot more of this.
Yeah, it's not good, but it is unfortunately reality. And I think it also, we've talked a little bit about, well, you know, when you're a big organization, a news organization, this sort of thing is so embarrassing. And the thing is like, it gets complicated. It's what is the way for these accounts to be more secure? You know, whatever makes the most sense in the implementation side of things is definitely a good idea. However, then you've got social media teams, and sometimes there are people who are accessing the same account on a variety of different devices and using different third-party apps. And, you know, it's not necessarily a simple solution, but
how, just out of curiosity, do you know how quick AP was to correct this?
Well, Twitter suspended the account pretty quick. I would say within about 10 minutes that account was suspended. But someone who works for the AP was I mean, right on top of it, saying that's clearly not us. Okay. So there was a lot of people freaking out, and then there were a lot of people who work in media entities saying no. Look, we already have confirmation that something's going on here. So yeah, I mean, the whole thing was over kind of before it began, but you know, the Dow dropping, that really did happen again, short period of time. But you don't want people to have that kind of power in order to game a system like, you know, the financial system.
Yeah.
A lot of money is based on. So,
yeah. Interesting. Right. In other news, Foursquare redesigns web listing pages for its 50 million site visitors after Explore usage doubles in 2 months. Now, I still don't use Foursquare, Sarah. Uh-huh. I know I've talked about it many times on the show before, but what do you think of this?
Well, I think it's a good move. Apparently, the whole, you know, we mentioned that Foursquare has gone through some redesigns and a really big one as of late that just puts more emphasis than ever on where are you? So let's talk about what's near you. Let's talk about the restaurants that might be near you. Let's talk about places that, you know, we know that you've checked in this town of Petaluma, for example. But here's a Thai place that you've never gone to, and your friend Leo really likes it, and here's what he said, and here's a tip that he has of what to order on the menu. All of that stuff is extremely helpful. The checking in aspect of it is really just one part of Foursquare, where when Foursquare launched back in the early days, that was it. So if Explore usage has doubled within the last 2 months, and it's, you know, the new Foursquare design, I guess it's about 2 months old, that's huge. That's huge for Foursquare. So we've got web listings pages that now are just more robust. You know, Foursquare has never had a huge web presence. In fact, at one point it had no web presence. That's, you know, outside of the apps themselves. Mm-hmm. So to redesign the pages for, you know, the 50 million people are coming to, per month. That's a huge number, and you certainly, you want your web presence to reflect that. And really, even though Foursquare is very much a mobile tool, it's the sort of thing where it's like, well, if you can, like Yelp again, or even, you know, something like Facebook, if you can access all of this information when you're at your computer that's not so mobile, you certainly want the experience to be just as good.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting with the new design, too, how they flipped it and you have the photos at the top of the page. And I think this really speaks to what we've talked about on the Social Hour many times before with the rise of visual social media. You know, everybody cares about images and images and images all the time. But just out of curiosity, Sarah, as far as those images, are those something that companies add to Foursquare, or is that user generated content?
It can be both. Okay. I can add a photo of anywhere that I am. And it will, you know, if I go to my local coffee shop tomorrow morning and I take a picture of the beautiful latte that someone makes me and I check in on Foursquare, then that photo is always associated with the location because that's where I was, or that's where I said I was. The coffee shop can also upload photos, but there's not really a distinction between them. You know, on Yelp, you can do that too. You know, you've got photos from patrons, mm-hmm. and then you can tell if it was uploaded by the business itself or or somebody who just went and ate there, you know, or frequented the business. Yeah, these photos of the Twit Brick House were, you know, they're just taken by people who were here.
People there. You know, it's interesting, though. It kind of makes you think how important it is for companies and business, especially restaurants, in terms of people who are serving food, to keep on top of what their Foursquare listing says. Because you can imagine how people could just take, you know, poor pictures of food, or maybe there's a dirty bathroom or kitchen or whatever they see, and how that could so easily taint some of these businesses' reputation is if they're not managing it well and not on top of it, right? So it's just it's interesting to see the mix of images on the top of this page.
I've always wondered, too, you know, there have always been, you know, the apps like Food Spotting, which is now part of OpenTable, Oink, which doesn't exist anymore, which was all about tagging stuff that you like. That was Kevin Rose's app before he joined Google Ventures, Kevin Rose and team, the team at Milk. And some of these apps had some fatal flaws, I thought, because I love eating and I take lots of pictures of food and that's all fine and good and I like talking about it. But there's also, you know, a restaurant that, oh, well, we used to have this on the menu, but we don't anymore. And now there's all this data, you know, that says that they make the best egg sandwich in the world. And it, you know, or there's rotating menus based on the time of year or, you know, what kind of vegetables are in season. So this is, you know, to your point, this is something that as a business, I think you need to really pay attention to. If you see this sort of erroneous information, particularly the visual stuff, you know, you want to make sure your phone number's up to date. And you want to make sure your menu's up to date. You want to make sure that you're not having some, you know, beautiful picture of bacon and eggs that people can't get when they walk a couple blocks and come into
exactly.
your shop.
Or even, you know, there has been a point, obviously, in the past where most people who are running businesses like restaurants are just worried about people leaving bad reviews. So just writing text on their site. But now, obviously, you know, having to check this whole additional layer and making sure the photos look good or what they represent in terms of the restaurant business and what they're trying to put out there as far as their brand. It's a whole other layer of being able to manage that visual side of things. So anyway, I'm sure businesses have their hands full with all of that.
Exactly. Well, Amber, let's move on to the interesting story here. There was the social media editor over at Reuters, at Thomson Reuters. His title was Deputy Social Media Editor. His name is Matthew Keyes. This was, gosh, last month that he was indicted on federal hacking charges. He was suspended from work. Well, but I think he was still being paid, but they were basically, while they were trying to figure some stuff out, Reuters said, oh, you're still an employee, but you're just not going to be here until we figure this out. Wasn't fired. However, so mid-March was when the indictment came down against him, and that's not been wrapped up yet. By the way, the alleges are that he helped Anonymous, the hacking group, access social media websites. So that's what he is accused of. During this time, he's had access to a computer. You know, he's just not been in the Reuters office where he was going normally. When the Boston Marathon attacks took place, he was extremely active online. So active on... I mean, during the week after the events happened, he had tweeted thousands of times over the course of a week. On one day, he tweeted 383 times. That's still a lot. 800 would be nuts.
But that's 300, a lot.
383 times, that's insane. I mean, I can't follow anybody who does anything like that. And a lot of it was just information that was coming in. It wasn't necessarily correct. It wasn't necessarily backed up with facts. You know, it was often speculative. Other social, you know, media folks and reporters and people who are in the same industry were going, what is wrong with this person? You know, this is the wrong thing to do. He had fired back saying, listen, if I had access to an actual newsroom, maybe I could be doing actual work. Then he had tweeted that Reuters had fired him and that he's part of a union that's going to file a grievance. So it sounds like he's going to be wanting to push back on this. But the idea is that, I don't know, Amber, what do you make? The federal hacking thing is almost, put that aside for whatever. You know, he was suspended. He was basically had very limited access to his job for an unrelated reason and then kind of went rogue in a way. And misrepresented what his organization is supposed to be doing.
Yeah, you know, I'm just surprised, and I've been following the story a little bit in terms of reading some of the tweets that he has sent out, and some of the tweets that really insult Reuters and insult people he works with. You know, accusing Anthony DeRosa from Reuters of copying and pasting his tweets, and it just seems like there are certain individuals out there who go online and who are looking for attention, and sometimes in the wrong way. And it seems like a situation a little bit like that. I did read the letter that was written to him, to Matthew Keyes, about his parody account that he started on Twitter at Pending Larry, that mocked the chief executive of Google, and just warning him that this was a written warning that he could not maintain that account. And it just seems to me, Sarah, having gone to journalism school and worked in the news business, that if you are in the news business and you work for Reuters, you can't just start parody accounts. You can't just, you know, casually insult your employer. And, you know, sometimes it's payback time, right?
Yeah, yeah. This did not end well. Well, it may not be over at all. Mr. Keyes had posted a statement that said, "It's my understanding that Reuters did not agree with some of the coverage I did on my own during the Boston Marathon events from last week. They have a specific set of reasons for the termination. The union that represents me doesn't agree with either." But, you know, I thought that it was an interesting topic just for us, because there is no set of clear defined rules for how to behave on social media. We all know that. But there are certainly things that you shouldn't do. And I think that this is a pretty clear case of some of those.
And it happens so often. You know, I think I'm getting frustrated with people like this, because I think that they obviously should know better than this. And I've worked with people in the past. I've had situations in terms of people I know who've written things on Facebook accounts or Twitter accounts and then gotten suspended, gotten in trouble. And it's bizarre to me that people don't just realize what these tools are for and how they are so public. And if you work for a big organization, you're going to get in trouble for posting certain things. If you don't want that responsibility, maybe it's time to go out and do your own thing. Because that's just part of, I think, working for a big company. And it just, you know, it's endless in terms of how often people do this. And, you know, they still think it's okay to do it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's true. There's in some of these cases, there's obviously some ego involved. It's obviously a case-by-case basis type of a thing. But yeah, it's, I mean, that would be, well, I was going to make a comparison to me doing something crazy and you know, somehow misrepresenting Twit, but it's not really the same.
But you wouldn't do that, right?
No, I clearly would never do anything to paint the organization I work for in a negative light. Then again, Leah wouldn't care if I did some silly parody account either. So apples and oranges,
exactly.
A little bit.
It's a different thing, though, when you work for someone like Reuters or you work for you know, another big news organization. I think you have a different type of responsibility.
Yeah.
And it just floors me that people don't get that. And I don't know. You know, it's one of those things where, unfortunately, if you think you're going to get away with it, you really don't understand the nature of the internet being a public platform. Because.
Sure.
You aren't going to get away with it. You're not. It's not just going to, you know, go smoothly at the end of the day. So, like I said, and I don't want to go into too many details, but recently have worked with someone who got in trouble for a situation kind of like this, and it's, you know, it just surprises me all the time.
Yeah, it does. There's also, you know, there's sort of the argument to be had of, all right, well, passing along information, the real-time mode of Twitter does have great advantages, but it also, you know, this person was not the only person who was just passing along everything that he was hearing. You know, we learned that everything said on a police scanner was definitely not something to be stated as fact, just because that's how the authorities were communicating with each other. So, you know, at what point is Twitter not supposed to be this is what I heard, just passing it along, you know, information, we'll figure it out later. How much is it supposed to be that fire hose of whatever? And how much of it should be well thought out? And I think that there's just has to be a balance. And again, you know, if it's if it's Reuters, then it's got to be the latter.
Exactly. And, you know, the last thing I'll say about this, but I think now more than ever, we need true journalists. We need people who are checking sources. We need people who really want to defend accuracy. We need that in our world, because there's too much of the other stuff going around too quickly from people who don't have to do that. So I think when you have AP, Reuters, all these organizations, New York Times, you have to adhere to a certain set of policies. And if you don't, I feel like it's to the detriment of, you know, the information people are trying to get from trusted sources. So I don't know. Anyway, can you see I'm infuriated?
Exactly. Well,
this is as bad as I get.
Between outside hackers and people who actually work for the organization going off the rails, who can you trust, you know?
Who can you trust there? That's the thing.
You've got to feel like you visit the New York Times, whether it's their Twitter feed or their website, or you're reading it in the newspaper, and it's got to be right.
Okay. Exactly. Okay, LinkedIn. Can you trust LinkedIn, Sarah?
Well, I'd like to. I'd like to trust that, you know, if I was ever in need of a job, it would be a great place for me to network with my former contacts and current ones. LinkedIn has a very interesting new initiative. They have developed a contacts app. So it's a part app and part web tool, basically. It's an iPhone app, at least to start, that takes all of the messages and the contacts and the events that you might be setting for yourself and communicating with people. And, you know, think of all the contacts, you know, in your Gmail account, for example. Well, maybe you've got some contacts that are also in that old Yahoo Mail account that you use every once in a while. Well, and then maybe you've got a variety of contacts that, you know, are associated with, they've got all sorts of services that they work with. You know, in my case, my iPhone app, which is, some of them are the same ones that are in my Gmail app, but not always. You get that situation where you type in someone's name and you're like, how do I not have their phone number in here? I've got it somewhere. So it's sort of if you tend to have a lot of contacts in a lot of places, it can be sort of this, everyone's all over the place. I wish there was just one place where all these contacts and these conversations and these events and stuff that's on my calendar live. And that's what contacts is supposed to be for LinkedIn. We were talking about it in Tech News Today that we recorded earlier today. And I said, what it feels like to me is sort of like an IM client where you've got AOL Instant Messenger, and you've got GChat, and you've got, you know, I don't know, Yahoo Messenger, because sometimes people were using that back in the day. And now you've got third-party clients where you can import all that stuff. So you're just chatting. No one's really talking about what service you signed up for to chat. Seems like the same idea that LinkedIn's going for with contacts. What's also cool about it is, Outlook, you know, that would be another, you know, big mail stuff that you use for work rather than personal. What's nice is that LinkedIn, and I haven't been able to play with this yet because it's rolling out slowly to people in the U.S. first and then the rest of the world. Your contacts are supposed to be weighted based on how much you're actually getting a hold of variety of people in your life. You know, Amber, you and I talk all the time. We're emailing each other throughout the week. So I'd want you to be fairly high up there. I wouldn't necessarily want you to be just down in the M's for MacArthur looking through stuff alphabetically. So if that works well, I think that's great. Obviously, with something like LinkedIn would not provide the service unless it helped out LinkedIn. So this will clearly keep people to be making sure that their LinkedIn profiles are updated as possible. You know, nice profile picture that I'm seeing in my contacts app type thing. So it's not for no reason, but it is a standalone app or a web tool, which is something like Card Munch, which we've talked about on the Social Hour in the past, which is also a LinkedIn property, but sort of acts independent. So what do you think? Is this something that you feel like you need?
Well, you know, it reminds me a lot of something like Zobni, even, which I think has a new name now. But all these tools that add that context around the conversations that you're having, and you're able to pull that up within your email account. So I do think it's interesting. I think the only issue that I would see is that I had just downloaded the new LinkedIn app, which I really like. It's really well done. And I almost want some of these features built into that. So I don't love the idea that you have now, you know, multiple standalone apps that help you manage your LinkedIn life, and Facebook has done the same thing. I just find it kind of frustrating because you're automatically going to default to just one of those apps.
I think. Yeah, absolutely. There are also people who just don't like LinkedIn. We talk about LinkedIn because they just keep rolling out social stuff, you know, so we keep talking about it. I have never had a problem with LinkedIn. I understand that LinkedIn has a little bit of a potential identity crisis that it doesn't, that it wants to skirt, which is it's for businesses, and that's how they make their money. There's certain paid services and paid accounts that they rely on, but they don't want to just be like, oh, this is for corporate people, because not everybody identifies with that sort of thing. LinkedIn is for everybody. You can have a free account. I've had one for years, and it's a way to communicate with people. We don't have to be talking about anything that's related to our careers if we don't want to, but you know, if to have an app like this where it's like, it's just people that you are contacting or are contacting you on either, you know, just once or a regular basis, we want it to have one single place where you will be able to pull up anybody that you've got contact information, whether it's phone numbers or email addresses or whatever, you know, where they live, maps, addresses, that sort of thing, in one place. And then you'll associate that one place with LinkedIn. If it can be executed correctly, I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how everybody uses LinkedIn necessarily, but I find I don't use it that much in terms of just messaging with people. But I use it more for finding out about an individual if I'm going to a meeting and I want to see what they look like or I want to see what their past experience is. So I think it's good in that way. But as far as communications, and I've mentioned this on the show before, I sometimes get frustrated because I'll email people on LinkedIn that I want to connect with, and I don't know, maybe 50% of the time they write back. Whereas if I actually send them an email to their email account, then I tend to get a better response. So I'm not sure that everyone still takes LinkedIn that seriously from a standpoint of, oh, I need to check all of my messages on a regular basis. Yeah. That's my only complaint right now.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you there. Well, you know, they're trying to get their hooks into us a little bit more. So we will see. We'll do a little walkthrough. You know, when I can get.
All right.
Yeah. So we will revisit LinkedIn's new contacts service. Sooner the better. Quick reminder that we record the Social Hour usually live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. That's Amber's time. 1 p.m. Pacific, where I am. We are recording the show on Thursday afternoon because I'm going to be out of town tomorrow. And thanks to Amber for playing along now that you're down in Florida. And I'm sure you'd rather be out splashing in the pool than talking to me.
Oh, no way, Sarah.
Never. But our website is twit.tv/TSH. So if you can't visit us live, join us live, be chatting in the chat room with us, that is fine. Not a problem. You can always catch up with our show on demand at your leisure. You can look through past episodes on our website. And each episode page not only has links to stuff that we talked about. Lamar Wilson was actually my guest last week because, Amber, you were in transit from Canada to the good old U.S., and he was awesome. We had a good time. It was a fun show. And so you can watch the video and you got your links there. And we try to make it as easy for you as possible to just watch our fine programming and keep up with us as well. All right, Amber, we got social tips. We got spotlights. We've got fiascos. It's all true.
Yes.
But first, let's take a moment to thank Audible. They're our first sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. It was funny. Leo and I, Audible had also sponsored this week's iPad today, and he said, "Do you use Audible?" And I said, you know the answer. My gosh, I need Audible. I need Audible in my life. If I didn't have it, I would be very, very sad because I do a lot of driving, and that's the way that I can actually get through books that, if I'm being honest, I would never sit down and read otherwise. I love reading. Books keep us smart. They keep our vocabulary good. They help us explore new worlds or learn about the ones we already live in. Fiction, nonfiction, I mean, it's a huge, huge, huge market. And Audible has more than 100,000 downloadable titles of all different kinds of books. Fiction, nonfiction. I mean, pretty much anything you could ever hope to want to read is on Audible. And what's neat about Audible is that once you download a book, this is a book that's being read to you. It's being sometimes read by the author themselves. Sometimes it's being read by several different voices. It sounds good, though, and it'll tell you, you know, right on each book page, like, this is going to be a 10-hour type of a thing. So I think, oh, you know, in a week of commuting, gosh, I mean, that's my book right there. I mean, when was I going to read that otherwise type of a thing? And it just, you can sort of be doing other things at the same time. So, you know, reading a book is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. But listening to a book on audible.com is a whole different experience indeed. And once you do download that book, it's yours. So it's as if you've got this virtual bookshelf. You know, you can access Audible content on a variety of devices. I usually use it on my iPhone because I can Bluetooth that to my car speakers, but you've got all sorts of options. And if you are watching the Social Hour or listening and you're interested and you never tried Audible before, so you're like, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. I can guarantee you will like it. One audiobook that we were talking about earlier, this is an oldie but a goodie, Amber, was Tina Fey's autobiography, Bossy Pants.
That's so funny.
And that's a great example of a book that she reads it, you know, so it's you feel like you're just hanging out with Tina, that sort of thing. But there are a lot of books out there. Jason Howell is usually behind the controls, and he usually tells us what he's reading because he's always reading something. But yeah, Tina Fey's book is, 6 hours and 35 minutes? That's an easy one. It was released, gosh, actually 2 years ago now. Wow. See, what's neat about that is that you might have listened to this book and been like, this is the funniest book, because really funny. It's actually, if you haven't listened to it, I think you'd like it. But you've got the book, right? Because it's in your Audible collection. Give it another listen. Hey, you probably got 6 hours, right? Going from point A to point B. To download this audiobook for free, or another one of your choice, whatever book you want, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. That's audiblepodcast.com/socialhour to get a free audiobook of your choice and enjoy. Try Audible free for 30 days. And we thank them for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Amber, your social tip is something that involves Facebook and privacy, which is usually something that gets about half the people in the world to go, Facebook and privacy do not go hand in hand.
Yeah, I know. And you know what? This isn't going to be for everyone in the sense that this isn't an app that you can download. Instead, it's really just a jailbreak tweak to your phone that allows you to have more privacy if you're using the Facebook app. So I didn't realize this, Sarah, but I guess now that I think about it, of course, when you set up your privacy settings on the web, on your desktop computer, that doesn't necessarily translate to the actual app. And so a lot of people being concerned about privacy, you may want a way to be able to go in and tweak things on your iPhone to allow you to be able to have more privacy and more control over that within the Facebook environment. So this is just a little tip from Lifehacker that I stumbled across today and tells you how you're able to do that tweak. I think it's $1 for FB privacy and a relatively easy way to be able to go in and to manage some of those settings and be able to have a little more control of what's private and what's not.
This is pretty cool. This is awesome. I mean, I know that there are definitely some of you out there who are going to be like, well, why is it only on the iPhone? Well, I don't know. That's kind of frustrating because obviously not everybody who's watching our show is using iOS, but I am. I love this. I think that's great. I think the Facebook privacy controls, the default privacy controls, you know, I'm pretty familiar with them because I try to keep up on the stuff and I'd go in there and make sure that I know what all my settings are at. If I'm sharing certain photos, are they public? Are they just being shared with a certain group of people? Is it my friends of friends and that sort of thing? But anything that makes that experience easier, because I do think it's pretty convoluted. Mm-hmm. The Facebook privacy experience, Amber, you get anybody who's not, you know, a techie, who, you know, is not comfortable in a variety of, you know, settings and figuring stuff out, down in front of Facebook privacy settings, it's a pretty overwhelming experience. So
yeah, definitely.
I like the idea of a different layout that helps people get the privacy settings that they're looking for.
Exactly. And I think it's with this particular tweak, it's more than just privacy. There are other things that you're able to enable, things like being able to send more than one photo and a message. So you're able to tweak a few different things. Like I said, you know, not everybody is going to be able to go in and do this necessarily, but I think it's just good for people to realize that you don't necessarily have that same privacy when you're using a mobile app for Facebook. So it's something to think about and maybe eventually they'll make it easier. Maybe.
Facebook privacy, FB privacy is the name of the app.
Yes, and sorry, Sarah.
That's
I was
okay.
Going to say, So FB privacy, I think, like I said, it costs $1. So, You know, relatively affordable for most people.
It seems like a good price for your privacy, because who could put a price on privacy? Actually, it's about $1 for Facebook privacy. Hey, so our spotlight this week is pajama related. Is that really happening?
It's happening. And you know what? It was funny because when I was going through some of these links, I thought this would make a really good rad or fad. But I have another rad or fad, Sarah, that I wanted to do because it's particularly interesting for you, I think.
Good.
So we'll get to that later on. But first off, for our spotlight, we have these pajamas that have been created by someone in Idaho Falls, Idaho, and they're called Smart PJs. And these PJs are for kids, and they have a QR code on them. There's a version for girls and one for boys, and there's an app that goes along with it. So basically, with your phone, you scan the QR code, and you're able to connect it. It basically unlocks a story, a children's story, with pictures and words on the screen. So it's a way to do nighttime storytelling for parents that makes it interactive. Now, there are a number of problems with this, Sarah. I think it's kind of cool when you hear about it, but then you think of studies that have come out saying it's not great to bring technology into the bedroom when you're putting your kids to sleep and blah, blah, blah. You know, not necessarily the best thing to do at nighttime. However, it's kind of a cool idea.
Well, you know, as somebody who has a child, is this the sort of thing that you would be interested in? I mean, you're a pretty good person to bounce something like this off of. I mean, are smart PJs a good idea, or is this never going to happen in your household?
Well, I think here's the thing is that when you become a parent, sleep is so important because you don't get enough of it, especially when your kids are really little. So if once in a while you need an aid, something to help you perhaps get your kid to sleep on that night where you've just gone 3 or 4 nights, no one's had any sleep, and you need something to spice up bedtime as far as a fun way to tell a story, then I think go for it. You know, every single night, obviously you may perhaps run out of stories, but it's, you know, it could be a fun little thing once in a while. So if you look at it like that, I don't think it's necessarily all that negative.
Right. You know, it's funny. There was a there was an article earlier that I found on the web that was about the idea that some kids are becoming overly attached to their iPads. Of course, it's, you know, it's, you put iPad in a headline and I'm going to notice it. But this is, you know, the idea is, well, you know, it used to be TV, right? Hours of TV. So go sit in front of the TV and, you know, let me do the laundry or make dinner or whatever. And then, you know, kids are watching too much TV and their brain's going to turn to mush and they're not thinking anymore. And now the fear from some psychologists is that these, you know, kids have an unhealthy obsession with iPad apps, and you take away the iPad and they can't handle it. Now I say, I'm saying to myself, it's sort of like quality programming on TV, right? It all depends on what you're using it for. I mean, the little tablet is not of any use to anyone. It's all about what you're doing with it, you know? Are you watching movies on your iPad? Well, basically it's a TV then. Are you drawing? Well, it's, you know, like a pen and, or, you know, a piece of paper and crayons, that sort of thing. But it's interesting. It's when it comes to, especially with kids, it's all about balance, right?
It is about balance. And the thing is, I think you're exactly right. It's all about the context as far as how they're using these different tools and if they're getting enough time outside. Now, I will say that my son just turned 4 and he is, I don't know if I should use the word addicted, but he is hooked on Minecraft. Big time.
Okay.
And he's 4. Okay. So here he is trying to explain to me that he's going into tunnels, he's putting up torches, zombies are chasing him, and he gets really into it and really animated. And in some ways I think, oh my gosh, that's amazing to watch him be able to go into Minecraft and just start building. And the other hand, you know, when he doesn't want to stop, sometimes it's difficult to pull the iPad away. So I think it's a constant struggle for a lot of parents.
Yeah.
But if they're doing the right thing, it does become kind of interesting. And I will say, I don't know how he stumbled across it, but somehow I didn't realize, is there a Minecraft show on Twit?
Yes. OMG okay. Craft.
Okay.
Which
so
Chad,
he started.
Chad Johnson.
He found
hosts.
It.
He's very into it. Wow.
Yeah.
With
I don't know.
Come from you?
No, it didn't come from me. I think he was doing it with Chris, his dad. And basically all of a sudden I turned around and they were watching Chad with the Minecraft show. And Connor couldn't believe it. He's like, this kid is telling us how to play Minecraft. I was like, he's a little older than you. But anyway, it's cool that you want to watch it. So you can tell Chad he has a 4-year-old fan in my son.
Oh, that's wonderful news. That's funny. See, I that's great. You're like, Minecraft, do you have a show? Yeah, we do. It's to be fair, it's fairly new, but that's great. Well, the next time you visit, you bring Connor out and he and Chad can play some Minecraft. They're only
totally
a couple years
in.
Apart in age anyway, so I'm sure they'd
it's
have other things to
teach
talk about.
Me because I don't know how to play. And so all of a sudden Connor's like, Mom, the zombies are coming to get me, help me. And I literally have no idea how to play and I don't really want to know because I see him sit there and get sucked into this whole universe, but I probably should learn. So I'll bug Chad.
Yes, I'm sure Chad would love to teach you some tricks.
Awesome.
So I have a weird confession to make. The first week that I didn't see any email in our inbox, I thought to myself, that's sort of weird. Gosh, I guess people felt shy this week. So I pulled responses from Twitter. And, you know, people get a hold of us a variety of different ways, Amber. Then another week went by and I thought, well, that's weird. That's really weird. Gosh, you know, does everyone just hate us? Nobody wants to email us anymore? That can't be right. Finally, I went and talked to Radford, who's the guy that knows the things around here at Twit. And I said, is there something wrong with our email account? I'm not getting an email. And it just doesn't, like, even if we were wildly unpopular, at least someone would email me to say that. So it turns out that for whatever reason, our email has been... It got rerouted weirdly, and we haven't actually gotten any email in the last few weeks. So if you have sent us an email, please send it again because it's gone forever. The social hour at twit.tv is where you send email. But instead, because we don't have emails to show off, we still definitely want to talk about how the world is such a social place and we're always getting great tips of things to talk about and services to show off and questions and comments. There's Radford. Look at Radford. He's just in there. He's in there dancing. Yeah, he's in there dancing because he fixed my email problem. Yeah, I don't even really know what happened with that. But I thought I'd share a couple things on Twitter. Wow, that was cool, Alex. I was like, wow, look at us from behind. That's like the Z-axis. Look at me. Woo. Hey, zoom out. Zoom in. All right. Wow, yeah. Okay. Woo.
Fun shot.
That's I really looked at the back of this set. It's weird. It's like out-of-body experience. All right, first story comes from Twitter. This is, I would credit one of you, but many of you are sharing the story, and that's BetaWorks acquiring Instapaper. That is kind of a surprise to me, I have to admit, Amber. Instapaper, of course, is the way that you can share articles from around the web when you come across a lot of stuff you'd like to read, but you don't necessarily have time or you're not on the device that you want to read it on later. So you sort of mark stuff to be read later. It shows up in a nice list on Instapaper, and then you can access Instapaper from anywhere and read stuff when you want to, and you don't have to keep a lot of tabs open and that sort of thing. Instapaper has a lot of competition, so... There's been some talk like, well, Pocket is another read later application. Readability is yet another. Safari for Apple has its own built-in read later functionality now. It's had it for a couple of years. And BetaWorks, which is the company that Instapaper sold to, Instapaper's developed by Marco Arment, who's just one guy, single guy, so it's not even really a team. BetaWorks, as you might recall, also bought Digg back in the day. So Digg is now a BetaWorks company, and BetaWorks changed Digg radically, but it seems for the better. Digg has enjoyed a really good sort of renaissance of the service and gets good numbers, and people seem to really like it. Amber, what do you make of this? Do you think Instapaper was... There was so much competition, it needed to get bought by somebody, or are they going to change it?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully they don't change it. I know a lot of people who love Instapaper just in many ways for its simplicity. So I think it's kind of a neat acquisition, actually. It allows them to kind of expand their portfolio as far as the different services that they have out there. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes some sense, but a bit of a surprise.
Bit of a surprise. You know, Knox Harrington says in the chat room, I wonder if the new owners, meaning BetaWorks, will insist that Instapaper be iOS only. And that's in reference to the fact that Instapaper is iOS only. And for a really long time, the developer said, that's just what I'm interested in. So that's just kind of the way that it is. You know, he charged a small amount of money. You know, he made a living. It worked for him. And as Leo has pointed out in the past, there is an Android version of Instapaper, but it's not actually his. It's made by somebody else. He sort of gave them his blessing. But this might be one of these situations where BetaWorks has the development capacity and the money and the time, and you know, I can put more of an effort into making Instapaper a service that more people on more OSs could use.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not exactly sure how many we'd need, but yeah, I'm sure you guys could think of a few places that Instapaper would really be nice that it doesn't currently work on. So there's that as well.
Now, Sarah, this is an interesting story. It seems like the story of fake followers will never, ever die.
Never.
As more and more people continue to buy followers. In fact, as we've heard many times, it's a multi-million dollar industry. A lot of people, from individuals like celebrities to big brands, have been accused of buying followers over the past year or two. Mm-hmm. And in this particular story that you found in the New York Times, it looks like two researchers kind of point out a few individuals and brands who have some suspicious activity in their Twitter accounts as far as followers being added to their accounts and also leaving their accounts.
Yeah, so these Italian security researchers, Andrea Struppa and Carlo De Micheli, gosh, that was really bad Italian. They've pointed out a few different Twitter accounts and said, listen, I mean, we know that people sometimes buy fake followers, and there are a variety of reasons that you would want to do that. You want to look more important than you are. There's a certain sort of illusion of like, wow, you've got 200,000 followers. You must be a really big deal. Maybe I should buy your book. There's all sorts of reasons for that. In fact, they say that, you know, there are several reasons. You either want to acquire large volumes because it's an ego thing. Sometimes it's a visibility thing. And then sometimes it can just artificially lift your position in something like Google search results. So there are a variety of motivators for that sort of thing. But they called a few people out. One is P. Diddy, the rapper, and I don't know, media mogul, I guess you would call him. Another is a politician. This was a Democrat from Colorado. His name is, I want to make sure I get his first name right. Last name. Oh, gosh, where are you in there? Representative Jared Polis. What's interesting about this story, and his Twitter account is just at Jared Polis, is that he gained, they say on average, it was 15 new followers a day for about 2 years. So very slow and steady, okay? That's pretty good. Last July, he added 19,705 Twitter followers. A few months later, he lost 13,332 Twitter followers in a single day. So you figure, all right, well, if you're maybe you're I don't know, you're running for office and you know you want to make it seem like you've got, you know, this big community behind you type of a thing, and he's denied doing that. He said it was sort of a follow back program type of a thing that got him so many followers. But how does it explain where the followers all go? You know, if they don't really exist to begin with, I mean, nobody's using services to dump all their followers. So then at that point, it gets into this interesting, well, what is Twitter doing behind the scenes? Does Twitter finally figure out some algorithmic way to kill all these accounts in one fell swoop? Mm-hmm. Amber, I've noticed, really not recently, because my Twitter activity has really, I mean, I think I'm more of that slow and steady type thing. I don't see a big spike, and I don't see a big drop really ever, and I guess that's good. But in years past, I've definitely noticed, like, gosh, I lost like a few hundred followers. I didn't say anything very controversial. And then I realized it must be a Twitter spam thing. Behind the scenes, I just got a bunch of accounts killed that were falsely inflating my profile anyway.
Yeah, I mean, and I noticed, I mean, there are people that I know right now who I follow on Twitter where I've seen some massive jumps that are somewhat suspicious. You know, I can't figure out how some people get to a certain point in terms of, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a few thousand people a day are following them. So people continue to do it, Sarah. And it's one of those things that I think they're not going to be able to stop people necessarily. But it's unfortunate when people find out the truth and figure out that a lot of the followers are fake. So if Twitter is getting rid of some of the fake followers, I think that's a good thing. But it'll be very difficult to squash that market entirely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just keeps happening. And it's sort of, it's obviously somewhat embarrassing for a brand or a celebrity to be called out in a New York Times article by a research team that is, you know,
oh yeah,
they've saying, hey, Pepsi Cola, clearly there's some fake follower stuff going on. It's hard to know. It's hard to know who's been engaging in black market Twitter follower account activity. But I don't know. Amber, anytime anything on Twitter, in fact, I get some sort of a perverse pleasure out of reporting things as spam on Twitter. I don't know why. I don't enjoy spam in any other part of my life. I don't enjoy it on Facebook. I certainly don't enjoy spammy email, but somehow on Twitter, I like being like, report for spam. When I see someone who's like asked the same question, you know, of 200 people in the last 13 minutes, you know, it's some sort of promotion thing.
Yeah.
So I think if we all do our diligently, report things that are spammy, then we're all better off.
Yep, it's a good point, Sarah. All right, for our social media fiasco of the week, this is pretty unbelievable. I had to read this story. I think I've read it three times on Mashable just to make sure I have some of the facts straight, because it just... It's pretty hard to swallow as far as realizing that this actually happened. An ad in the UK by Hyundai, the car maker, they produced a 60-second commercial. Now, in the commercial, and this is where it gets terrible, the commercial titled Pipe Job, it depicts a man who is attempting to commit suicide by starting his car, his Hyundai, in an enclosed garage. But because the car's emissions are so low that... nothing happens. Oh. And somehow this is a good thing.
Oh my gosh. That's awful. That is the worst.
That's awful.
That's awful. How awful. So what were they thinking?
I still don't know. I mean, and the thing is, the video has been taken off of YouTube. I guess the ad went up online at one point. There's a bunch of different stories about how the internet reacted. That's why we're talking about it on the show. You know, a lot of people through social media just absolutely horrified. Mm-hmm. One person in particular, a copywriter based in the UK, based in London, her name is Holly, and she had written an article, an open letter on her site that talked about how her father had committed suicide and had done it in this way. And she was particularly disheartened to see this, and she just cried when she saw the commercial. Mm. And said at the end of it she would never buy one of these cars and how it was really in poor taste. I couldn't agree more. I mean, I literally have to read this three times to think, is this a joke? I mean, is it April 1st? Like, how would they think that is a good idea at all, especially with so many teens committing suicide? And it's just not something that you really want to play around with like that.
Yeah, and you know, somebody in chat room, ScooterX, says this was made by an ad agency. Obviously, it wasn't meant for the public. This was not something that, you know, anybody saw on television, for example. But again, I mean, I only saw a very small portion of it. But it's like this wasn't just like something that was storyboarded and give, you know, passed across the table as like a potential idea. This was something that was actually put together. So it got far enough to the point where you say, but when did anybody say this is a very good idea? And then yeah. It just goes to show you that even if something is not necessarily meant for public consumption, boy, you got a link online, just one little link to something that exists somewhere, and it's associated with Hyundai, and that's bad for Hyundai, no matter how it's associated with Hyundai. It was a potential Hyundai ad, right? And all of a sudden, people are like, well, I'm never buying one of your cars because now that's what I think about when I see your brand.
And if someone sends you a link to a video, whether it actually ended up airing on television or not, but if it's a 60-second commercial and it's a high-end commercial, I'm going to assume that it first went on television because it has that format, and I'm not going to be able to necessarily verify that. So I think it's just a dumb move on their part as far as the agency. So never do that again.
Yes, agency, come on. You can do better. And, you know, if you've got stuff that you're not sure is going to resonate with the public, this was probably one of these ideas where they went, wow, we're really going to push some buttons, but boy, will people remember the type of car type of a thing. If it's something that's, you know, on a fence, on a line, you probably want to make sure that it's well password protected if you're going to be sharing it online anywhere, or else we're all going to see it and everyone's going to hate you. Hey, we want to hear from you. This is good. This is actually, let's take this show to a higher note, and that is emailing us, because now when you email us, we're actually going to get it. It's going to work again. And we want to hear all of your questions, comments, and feedback and ideas for future shows at thesocialhour@twit.tv. TheSocialHourTwit.tv. We're showing Radford again because he's the one who saved our email. He's like Superman, basically. He's a superhero, and he sits right in this office next to the living room set where I am sitting right now on The Social Hour. A little inside baseball there. Leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626-SOCIAL. You can always record a video, upload it, send us the link to that video. In the video, you could... you could have a little, you know, review of some sort of new social offering that we've talked about. You could ask us a question. You could tell us how much you love the show. I don't know. Yeah, get creative. Try to keep phone calls and videos to 30 seconds or less so we can roll them in a future episode. That's kind of the sweet spot for us. And thanks in advance. All right, Amber, before we get to your rad or fad, get ready. We'd like to take a moment to thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love social media solutions from SAP. It's just perfect for the show, really, because so many of you work in large enterprises, and social media solutions from SAP helps companies use social media to improve customer service and improve those support processes. Because everyone, well, not everyone's complaining about your brand. Let's hope they're not complaining at all, but hey, it happens, right? And you have to monitor that. You want to be on top of what people like and don't like. The problem is it's scattered all over the place. It might be on Facebook. It might be someone's blog. It might be in a tweet. You know, are you necessarily following them? Or you know, you're sort of searching around, looking for keywords and that sort of thing. If you work in social media at a large enterprise, you know that it can be a challenge. You want to stay on top of the conversation, but it's just, it's not as easy as just wanting to do that. With social media solutions from SAP, large enterprises can listen and engage with social media. By listening, you get your captured reports on conversations. They've got relevant terms and types of passion. You know, is someone really, really upset about something? Does somebody really, really love this new feature that maybe your business has put out? You want to know that because it helps you make better products down the road. It helps you build better products. If your customers like or love or hate something, helps you. You just uses natural language processing, known as NLP in the biz, to smartly and automatically know the differences between a statement like, this app has never been good. App has never been good. Or, this app has never been this good. Very similar means two totally different things. So that's sort of where this whole concept of big data gets really, really smart, because SAP knows how to use that. And it really cuts down on the time of you sort of wondering what everyone's thinking. Then, of course, the engaging component. You don't just want to listen. You actually want to help people. You want to help your customers. So you can see activity on Twitter and Facebook and maybe a review site of some kind, and figure out how to lead to direct customer engagement. You know, you can drive sales. You can quickly solve your customer problems. If you've got a team and you get a message, SAP can help you route that message to the appropriate person who's actually the best person to handle the problem, you know, or to get back to that customer. Rapidly responding to customer feedback, extremely important. You just want to be on top of this. Customer's mad, you can't get back to them a month later. You got to do it now. So if someone posts a negative review, an agent can remedy that problem. So social media solutions from SAP. Are you interested? Do you work at a large enterprise? Do you want to know more? Do you want to tell somebody about it? Go to sap.com/twit. You can take a guided tour there. I mean, hopefully I explained it well, but you can take a more in-depth guided tour at sap.com/twit. See for yourself how social media solutions from SAP works. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You know, Amber, I'm going to actually have lunch with a couple of gentlemen from SAP in a couple of weeks. I'm sorry that you won't be able to join us.
I'll be there virtually, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm going to find out a little bit more about the product. I'm super excited to meet some of these folks in real life.
Awesome. Love it. Okay, Sarah, so now it's time for our Rad or Fad, and this one is for you. As I mentioned earlier on, it's something that I chose because I was curious if you thought it was cool or not, and now I feel like we're almost like a television newscast. You know how they have the kicker all the time that has the animals at the end? You know, it's like cute baby lambs or whatever it might be. We have animals here for our Rad or Fad, and this is a social network. I found out about it on Shiny Shiny. It's based in the UK. It's called My Social Pet Work. Okay.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
Now, it's kind of like Catster and Dogster. I know there have been other social networks that have to do with pets. However, this one seems a little bit different in that you're kind of pretending that you're the pet as far as the type of messages that you're putting out there. And it says so that your animals don't get lonely necessarily. And it's got that Pinterest feel to it. So when you go to the homepage, you'll see the list of all of the different animals who are on My Social Pet Work. And because I'm not a pet owner, Sarah, I can't say if this is rad or fad because I'm just not sure.
Well, let me tell you, Amber, that I think this is more than rad. This is super rad. And I love the idea of talking as if you are the animal talking. So many people know, because I don't have any shame, that I follow quite a few pet accounts on Facebook. Facebook is this is probably why My Social Pet Work even exists, because they realize, gosh, there's so many pet accounts, very, very popular Facebook pages, where obviously a human who has a lot of time and effort to spare puts photos and stories and updates and all sorts of stuff into the account, like Boo the Dog. Boo the dog's owner is not talking on Facebook. It's as if Boo is managing his own Facebook account. So I think that there is a market here. The question is, you know, is it a fad that there are other competing services that'll never get anywhere? Or are we going somewhere with this? You know, I noticed that there was like a little miniature pig on the My Pet Network. I mean, so this is not just cats and dogs. It's all sorts of different animals.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe that's what we need. It's variety. It's very Pinteresty, that's for sure. They got that.
It is very Pinteresty.
They've tapped into that.
Yeah, they definitely have. And you know what? There's also a bit of competitiveness happening on the site too, because you're able to vote for the cutest picture and cutest video based on the animal that gets the most love clicks. So it seems like this in some ways is almost like the next generation of a pet social network, if I can call it that. And the idea being that it does incorporate a lot of these features that we see in other social networks. So yeah, I think it's kind of cute. There's some cute pictures on the homepage.
Yeah, for sure. I see a picture of Maru. I wonder if Maru's owner is, it's just probably somebody who likes a photo. Oh, you know, that's funny. So in the upper left-hand corner, there's a French bulldog wearing a top hat. That yep. is my friend Sonia's dog, Trotter.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. Just Sonia and I went to a baseball game yesterday, and we talked about Trotter the whole time because I'm obsessed with her dog. But see, this is the thing. Is like, you've got these celebrity animals, and animals are all cute. So it's like, you don't actually have to be like beautiful and talented in order to, you know, become the next big thing. So
yeah.
I think that my social pet work is kind of like, it's like a, you know, a talent agency. Who will be the next Boo? Who will be the next Lil Bub?
Of course, you know an animal on the social pet network or whatever it's called.
Amber, I love
That's
it.
It's hilarious.
I love it. I want more.
Okay.
I want more.
I'm trying.
I think it's rad.
I'm trying, just for you. So I'm glad you think it's rad, and I'm sure other pet owners will think it's rad too. And maybe they'll even sign up and introduce their pet to some other friendly pets online.
Yeah. Hey.
Maybe.
Hey, if you have a successful pet on my social pet work, or just a pet at all, you can let us know. I will appreciate that. I probably won't forward Amber all of the emails because there's only so many hours in the day, but I will appreciate it for sure. You know, there's, I was going to talk about this famous goat on Facebook, but you know what? We can save that for another show, Amber, because we've actually come to the end of our hour. I know that you are probably itching to get out and enjoy probably, I don't know, it's sunset time by now down in Florida. I bet it's still really warm outside though, so I'm very jealous about that. But thanks to everybody who spent the hour with us, especially taping at our unusual time, because I'm going to be in transit tomorrow. So we won't be live tomorrow at our regular time on Friday, but our regular time on Fridays is 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It's always nice to have you guys along for the ride. And remember, our website is twit.tv/TSH for all of our show episodes and subscription links. If you want to subscribe to our video feed or our audio feed, if maybe you like listening when you're on the go, that's great too. You can, of course, find our show on iTunes. And until next time, stay social, everybody. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber McCarthy, and we'll see you next week.
See ya.